some of the preliminary information. Can you give me your name?
Well, Bertha Soderholm, and I came into Webster's Corners, as this place was known at that time, in 1929. And I was 10 and a half years old at that time, and came with my parents that had arrived from Finland the year before to Alberta. Well, 1929, Webster's Corners was nearly all Finnish community, because it has been settled by the Finnish speaking people years gone by, known as the Sammuntakojat. It has quite a history which most of these historians know about. Well, at that time, the men worked in the bush, loggers and sawmill workers, and or whatever type of work that they could have, and then they farmed on the side. While the men were out at their jobs, the women, they manned the homes, they milked the cows, they raised the chickens, they raised the children, and also took part in the activities of the community, and that is the culture end of it. The hall was the main center of all activities and organizing and this type, and that included concerts and plays and things like that. And this was done all on their spare time after their hours of work at home. And then in wintertime, mostly the men were home because the woods were closed on account of the snow and that way. And then, of course, 1930, 35, 36, there was those hard years down here. But the people in Webster's Corners, as I call it, they weren't as hard hit as the ones in Vancouver, because they always had their own vegetables and their potatoes and chickens and meat and things like that, that they had food, but they were very, very short on money. That was to be used very, carefully.
Did people deal with that by forming co-ops?
Yes, the Webster's Corners had co-ops, and they did the best with them. And then, of course, as the years went by, well, the co-ops were obsolete, and they died a so-called a natural death.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When did people organize cooperatives?
That was Webster's Corners co-op. I guess it was in 1930, wasn't it, Duno? That was still about 15 years ago when it
closed. Were you
closed.
Involved at all in the organizing of the co-op?
Well, I was so young at that time, but later on then, when I married and I was gone for 4.5 years from Webster's Corners, and then we came back. And then, like my husband Uno, well, then he was a manager of one of the co-ops for nearly 2 years, and I worked as a year and a half as a clerk in the co-op at that time. But then it became absolutely impossible to operate it because of previous misfortunes with management. They ran into a hole, and it just could not survive from that, so it was foreclosed.
Right. And Webster's Corners was primarily a working-class community?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Mostly loggers and farmers and And fishermen.
Right. Okay. People came from Finland, and was there a strong political life in the community? Were people... one of the things that Mrs. Pearson mentioned was that there were, very clear sort of political lines in the community.
Yes, they were all to the, more or less to the left, a socialist.
Right. Okay, so would the cultural life be focused around... left cultural events?
Yes.
Okay, what kind of things did people do? You were talking a bit about concerts.
Oh, they had three-act plays, and those plays would take on either a political side or humorous side or just a drama or whatever, operettas if they had enough singers and things like that.
Right. And were there women's organizations?
Yes. Always, as far back as I remember, and way before my time, when I arrived here, the women have always had an organization of their so-called own, and it's been known by many different names. And then during the Depression years, there was a Women's Defense League working to raise money and all that for the ones that were picked up for political reasons that way. Well, then that time was not needed. That was not, wasn't needed anymore, so it's changed its form in something else. And during the wartime, they worked for Red Cross, and then they worked for gathering clothes for Finland. And then, of course, the Vietnam War now, they did tremendous amount of work to supply knitted goods and sewing goods and money raised and all that for the cause in Vietnam. And right now, then, the Vietnam crisis is more or less not over, but over as far as our group is concerned. So now we are working for the peace movement.
Right.
And we meet regularly every month. And now this women's organization, must be 50 years old.
Did most of the women in the community belong to the organization?
At one time, say three-quarters of it, but now, of course, it has dwindled down as far as the population, the Finnish population has dwindled. Most of them have passed on, and they are so old they cannot take part. But we still have a very small group, but it's active in its way.
Right, okay. Why did you yourself start to work? When did you start to work in Florida?
Well, then, like my husband, he did odd jobs. He was a logger, he was a fisherman, he was a trucking, and this and that, wherever you can bring in a dollar or two. Well, then our children, we have two children, a boy and a girl. Well, then they got to be at that age where I was able to leave them more or less by themselves. Well, then I entered Berryland here, and it's only a little ways that I was home at 6 o'clock, and I left at 7:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning, so that I was home here while Uno, he was either logging or fishing, that I was home with the children, you see. But this work, of course, was seasonal because it had to do with the fruits and vegetables later on, you see.
When was that? Was this during the Depression?
No, that was after, it was after the Depression, or that the Depression was beginning to lift.
Mm-hmm.
That it was in 1942 that I worked at the mill, and it was after 1942 that I entered Berryland.
Were the mills organized when you worked there in the lumber industry?
They were, weren't they, Una?
No, they weren't.
No, they weren't, eh? But it was 1942. That's the time, anyway. The working people were demanding unemployment insurance for the people, and it was in 1942 that it more or less came into effect, because that's the time I got my first social security number.
Did the organizations? This is just returning back a bit. During the Depression, did the organizations in the community do any work around fighting for unemployment insurance and also relief?
Yes, old age pension, unemployment insurance, workmen's compensation, and family allowance, and the medical, even Medicare, Medicare, what we call Medicare now. Mm-hmm. All these, they were always on there. On their lists for demands for the betterment of the people in general.
Right, a lot of people don't realize that those things were won in fact through the struggles.
The younger generation now, you take, it's quite surprising. Like some time ago, we had a discussion about family allowance. They didn't have a clue that the family allowance has been fought for. They thought that it was just dished out by the government through their kindness.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you started to work, I guess, in 1942, and then you went on to Barryland. What were the conditions like?
At Barryland, it was hard work and it was piece work. And piece work, of course, is work is just like a bullwhip being used on a people. The more you get into the cans, the more wages you make. And I can't remember exactly what we were paid per dozen. I myself was more or less in the end of carrying and punching the cards for the women that were filling the cans. And then my job was to carry them and stack the trays and then help to put them on the belt. At those days, the canning process was ancient as it is all modernized right now, that there's no comparison. But it was all carrying on trays.
Was it hand filling?
Yes.
And did people work very long hours?
Well, we had the 8 hours. And sometimes some of us had to work, say, 9 hours. But it was mostly the 8 hours. But then if there wasn't any fruit and you were called in, and if you worked only an hour or two, well, that is all that you got paid for, was for that 2 hours. There was no extra pay for call-out time.
Right. So what sort of prompted people to begin organizing?
Well, out of a group of women now, you have the ones that hate unions and ones that are for unions. And out of those, there were few of us that knew that if we could get a union in, that we would get a better, better conditions that way. And I think that there were about four of us that began to casually talk amongst the women on lunch hours, since that we should have it organized. Well, of course, being green and all that, well, you didn't know exactly how to go about it. But anyway, as time went on, we found out a way that if we get in contact with a local in Vancouver that I can't remember the organization that was at that time looking after the food workers. And from there, we finally got hold of a man that came out to talk to us. And through that little start, well, we were finally able to get an union started, and our first contract was signed. The contract, of course, wasn't anything to write home about, but it was better than what the conditions were. And it's from that then that it has progressed, that today they have much better, although there are still quite a bit of improvements that could be made.
Was it almost all women who worked there?
Yes.
Right. And did most of the people work there as temporary workers?
Well, they were all, we could call them seasonal workers. And at that time, there was no seniority clause. If you got laid off, well, then a brand new one will take your place, even if you had months of experience.
And there were no provisions for health care or illness?
No. Okay. Compensation they did have.
Did most of the people who worked there come from this community?
Most of them, yes.
So people sort of knew each other outside of work?
Yes.
Did that help in terms of organizing?
Not really, no. Because in that way you could be neighbors, and one is against and one is for, so you have your differences. And then when we finally got the union in there, well, then we did have a clause in there that all have to pay union dues whether you signed up as a member or not. Well, there were quite a few of them, of course, said that I don't want to belong to the union and I do not want to pay the union dues. So our comeback used to be said that, well, if you don't want to pay your union dues, well, you go and tell the boss that you don't want to take the gain either that was realized by the contract. Well, then, of course, that gave them a little different view on that. They thought that, well, I'm losing something, although they didn't want to pay that $2 or whatever the union dues were per month, you see, that they wanted the raise, but they didn't want to pay.
What kind of things did you establish by unionizing? Did you develop a seniority system there?
That was, yes, later on then.
Right.
And they have a fairly good seniority there now.
Is it still mostly seasonal?
No, now it has progressed that it's on a very few members working, but they work practically during the year now. They do everything now from blueberries to beans and pork and beans and things like that, which at my time it was just strictly fruit.
Right. Okay. So, were you involved in being a shop steward, or were you?
Yes, I was for a period of time.
What kind of work did the stewards do?
Well, we sort of supervised and took in complaints and being on piecework, well, the shop steward's job was mostly there to watch that some of the women wouldn't go in there half an hour earlier to start doing the work, while the others would start at 1 o'clock and they would go in at 11:30 deal, you know. Anything that comes under shop stewards.
Did you collect the dues too?
No, that we had a secretary for that.
Okay. And, okay. In terms of piecework, did people fight at any point to establish hourly wages?
Well, of course, that was then with the union and all that. Well, then it was gradually being fought to that point that the piecework was abolished.
Right. Okay. Because the piecework, what I imagine, really undermine people's ability to create solidarity on the shop.
Yes, it's and then like I said that piecework. Well, it's just like a whip, you know. And instead of creating goodwill amongst each other, well, it was the one that had the sharpest elbow and was more aggressive. Well, naturally they got ahead, while a timid one will stand back and not get the box that was hers to be taken. That way, that it.
Right, very competitive. Were you working there during the war?
It's 45, end of the war. Yes, I was. And then 45, I worked there till 56, 57 I went to Clem 2, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Was the food industry at all sort of seen as essential to war production? Was it treated that way?
Not at Berryland, no.
Yeah. It was canning food.
Yes.
Do you remember the publicity around women as war workers? Was there a lot of publicity at the time? Did the image of women as workers change somewhat from that period?
Well, down here, then again, it didn't affect us as it would have affected people in Vancouver or you're close to war industry. See, we didn't have any war industry here. And then the ones that were interested in that, well, naturally they left the area and they went to work in the war industry. But as far as Berryland and all that, well, the ones that had their families the women did not leave. But there were some single or somebody that made the move and tried to better their livelihood that way, they left. But there was no dissension or anything like that against the women or in that respect.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of curious about, because I wondered if, because it was a fairly progressive community, whether people were quite open towards women working.
Oh, yes.
During the war. Mm-hmm. And that was generally the case. Did most women work?
You couldn't say that most of them, but it was the fraction of women that that did, you know.
Right. After you said before that after you had left Berryland, there was a struggle there when women were fired for organizing.
Yes, that was a year after I left. Well, then the union struggle was really the hottest issue there, and three women were fired for union organizing, which was at that time already against the rules of organized labor, that you're not supposed to be fired for union activities, but they were. I think one was taken back, but as far as the other two were concerned, well, they were let go. But that I was not there at that time anymore.
Right. Did because a fair number of people from the community worked at Berryland, did the community get involved in the unionization process there or in any of the struggles that went on?
Not really, no.
You also said that there was a wildcat.
Oh yes, that was the first feeling, first tries. You know, after talking about trying to get more wages and trying to get a union and not exactly knowing how to go about it. Well, then this one day we finally pulled off at noontime a wildcat strike, and we all didn't go back at 1 o'clock, excepting three scabs went in. And we stayed outside till the manager or the owner of the Berryland came out. And our wages at that time was 35 cents an hour, and we demanded 50 cents. But we got a 5 cent raise, so we got 40 cents.
Right. Then so that was a victory.
That was a victory, yes.
And that helped establish the union.
Yes, and that more or less began to, bring it in.
Was the union you joined in the Trades and Labor Council, or was it in the Canadian Congress of Labor? Was it an industrial union or?
Berryland. It was a.
Do you know which?
AFL.
I think it's American.
American outfit.
Right.
Yes,
American
the food workers.
Okay. So, what kind of policies did it have in terms of. Because there were a number of different labor sort of bodies at that point in time. Like, I think there was the Trades and Labor Council and the Canadian Labor Congress, and I wondered if at any time there were discussions around which group people should affiliate to, whether they wanted Canadian unions or...
No, this one, this local down here and the people being as weak as they were, there wasn't any of that discussion at all.
It was more like basic training.
Yes.